Hey everybody, welcome back to Game Store Profits. This is the place where we talk about God, we talk about games, and how we love them both in the utmost. My name is Jeff Romo, and I'm joined by Mike Perna.
Who's still bitter about not playing Scythe this past weekend.
Oh, and I'm also joined by Daniel Fisher.
Hey, I'm still bitter about not playing Scythe this past weekend either.
Yes, but at least you have it.
Yes, I do. It's sitting right behind me in the floor with my pile of new games.
It's in your house in all its diesel punky goodness, and it's not in mine.
I will tell you this. Do you know how awesome this company is?
Stonemaier? Oh, they're freaking amazing.
They give you Ziploc baggies for your bits.
Oh, yeah, no. Stonemaier Games is fantastic, not only just because they make awesome games, which they do, but he actually, like, his designer, developer blog, whatever that he puts out, it is the most informative blog I think I've ever seen as far as game design. He talks about how to run a Kickstarter. He talks about how to design games. That dude is spot on.
Nice.
But yes, no, I am upset about the fact that not only do you have it, you have yet to play it, which I said it before in the tavern, and I'll say it again. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Well, and you know what? There's a one-player mode, and I will get it played by the end of this week. I just came back, and I was completely slammed with family life, so, and recouping from Gen Con.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So let me ask, in the game, is the book, does it have like a lot of the art and stuff we've seen on the interwebs? Is it just, is like a really big instruction manual that has a history of everything?
I haven't actually opened it up that far. I've gotten the miniatures out. I haven't popped any of the cardboard out because I haven't had time. I looked at the miniatures because I was going through my miniatures going, what can I paint next? And I wanted to have a look at those. And they are beautiful, but I don't think I'll be able to paint them. I might give it a try, but because they're really a flexible, rubbery type plastic.
Oh.
And I'm afraid everything will chip off.
Interesting. Like after the paint dries and you bend something, it's going to go blip, blip. Well, you know what you got to do is you got to do like a crazy Hero Quest intro, like an unboxing of it, you know, but you gotta do it Tennessee style. And just like totally spaz out, you know the best thing about this thing here? Let me tell you right now, this thing right here, this is the best part right here, this robot. Yeah, look at this robot right here. That's the best part.
It's not a pretentious robot either.
No, you gotta call it a robot.
Robot.
Look at that here robot right here. Look at that. Look at them arms, them dangly legs.
Look at this dang mechanical person.
Boy, if I ever see something like that walking down the street, I'd be all, hoo-wee.
And literally every, I don't know what to say, whether or not every person that listens to us in the South will now be applauding or will be be marching against us.
You know the best thing about this side? It's not... It's not the scythe I cut my yard with.
Well, I can say that I am from Texas. I am from the deep heart of Houston. So there's a little Texas twang in my mockery. So just leave that out there.
I'm just saying, man, if Inroads East Tennessee had an office, I'd make sure you double bar the lock is what I'm saying.
Well, technically it has my living room as the office and yeah.
So before we grill Daniel on his Gen Con experience, which won't be your typical Gen Con report, just because the internet is flooded with Gen Con reports, and y'all don't need to hear another one about all the stuff that happened. Like, I was following the news like crazy about Gen Con, because I was actually part of Gen Cant this year, and I it's insane. The number of people, the number of publishers that were out there on Twitter saying the doors haven't opened yet and we sold out of everything. There were at least like one or two that said that before the doors opened, they'd sold out.
Well, that was because of the VIGs, the Very Important Gamers. I will tell you, Hogwarts Battle, they only allowed 50 a day to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had an exhibitor badge, you were not allowed to buy a copy.
Oh, that was a hot ticket right there. But between that, Seafall was one. Was the first one I saw sold out before the doors opened, and I think the doors actually did open, but Cry Havoc was done at easy before noon on the first day.
Yeah, I was surprised that I actually got a copy of Scythe. So I mean, it was the only one that had like 5 copies left.
Well, I think they brought. Speaking of Stonemaier again being real good about putting information out, I think the last blog post he did said they brought 1,000 copies and sold out of every one of them.
Yeah.
And there was only 5 left when you got there? That's crazy.
Well, I could only see 5. But their booth, they only had a 10x10.
And they were sharing the booth with somebody else.
Well, that's probably why. They probably had a 20x10 and was sharing the other side of it, so.
Yeah.
And I did get the promo card, but I didn't buy the expansion because I didn't have another $100.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He says that, but it's not worth it. Like, the amount of stuff that you get for that is pretty extensive.
Well, yeah, but y'all know where my most of my like freewheeling dollars go, and that's towards RPGs. So I probably would have been in the same boat, seeing new loveliness there.
No, Gen Con, it's dangerous. It's a very dangerous thing. Budgets for Gen Con need to be discussed months in advance because I saw one guy who posted his list as far as dollar amount, and he's like, if I got everything at Gen Con that I wanted, just presuming that, you know, somehow I was able to get in, I think he said his total was like something like $1,500. Like that was if he got everything he wanted.
Oh my
and that
gosh.
doesn't even include the guys who were just there previewing Kickstarters and that sort of stuff. It's literally just the stuff you could buy there.
There was a lot of, a few Kickstarters there that were technically on the border of we are selling to the public before we shipped out. So I was kind of, I really don't like Kickstarters that do that either. So
yeah, that's kind of a thumb in your nose at the people who jumped in early.
Well, I've discovered that there are some ways to do that. That's not super shady. Because, you know, sometimes they need to do that just to cover the costs of getting it out to the people. Because if you get over and above what you thought you could pull off, and you have some extras that are just sitting around, that the income from selling that excess helps cover the cost. Because shipping costs for this stuff ain't cheap. Like, anybody who's ever done anything on that kind of scale will tell you that, like, shipping costs are make or break for a Kickstarter. And a lot of the ones that fail don't take that into account, which is why they have delays upon delays upon delays. So it does feel wrong, but I do understand it.
Well, we've already kind of started talking about Gen Con. I'm going to reel it back. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the other things that were going on outside of the biggest, most spectacular of the last week. So for me, I spent a good portion of that time prepping for Mike's Gen Cant on Friday night, which was our Victoriana finale.
The role-playing portion of my Gen Cant experience.
Yeah, I hadn't realized it, but Brent had posted something in Twitter saying that it was exactly to the day 1 year from the day we started.
Right.
And I was like, what? Are you serious? That was totally unintentional. I was blown away by that. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately we didn't have Lieutenant Blackwell with us, but I think we had a pretty good closeout for the game. It was a lot of fun. It was a marathon session, that's for sure.
In typical fashion, it was riddled with technical difficulties, and I was almost passed out at my computer by the time it was over. So, you know, like every Victoriana.
It was insane. I don't know. This time it was a lot more, though. One person's computer was dying, and they went and found a spare computer, and then their battery was dying, and then there was internet connections, and then Roll20 was saying, nope, you're not gonna play. I think it was just a confluence of events all at once.
After a while, we were convinced that Roll20 itself was deciding that we shouldn't finish the game that night.
Yeah, we needed to play play on or something like that.
Which we will. We will play Numenera.
Yeah, we'll play Numenera. That's right. That's right. Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. I mean, it was weird finishing it up, and we're going to have a wrap-up episode that we'll put together to talk about, you know, some of the aspects of the characters that wasn't out there on the videos or that actually wasn't shared amongst the other players.
These characters had shady business upon shady business.
Yeah, and it's really cool too, being the GM and trying to play to those little subtleties that are beneath the water, because everybody was playing an iceberg in this game. It was, you know, just a little bit was above the surface, and you had all this history down below. It made for a very in-depth game. It had a lot of flavor. It had a lot of context. I was able to take a module, a pre-written module for Victoriana, and just basically cut out about 70% of it, take in some of the main story thread, and then branch it out to every player so that it would be at least somewhat meaningful to each player in their turn. But yeah, it ended up being a lot of fun.
That is fascinating, because I did not know that was a module, and I've seen a bunch of modules, so I didn't realize that was one of them.
Yeah, well, as any game master will tell you, steal when you can.
Oh yeah, oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
For dang sure.
Don't get me wrong. Now, granted, Numenera, and I'm just going to put this out there now, even though it's probably going to be next month before we actually make any movement on this, because my August is insane. But Numenera is coming up, and I know a couple people have gotten in touch with me before I started actively recruiting to say, when's Numenera happening? I want in. When I put out the official call, I may have to deal with the fact that there are so many people that want in that I might have to try to get character concepts before we start. Just, and I hate to limit it. And Jeff, it was funny because Jeff was all about the business of saying, oh, you know, I'll step out. It'll be fine. And I'm like, no, dude, you are our in-house GM. You finally get a chance to play, and I'm gonna make that happen.
Well, I definitely do appreciate it. That's for sure. I think we were talking about it when we were playing Victoriana, but it's been probably 4 years since I've played in a game. I mean, outside of Play by Post and in the Pathfinder groups, but yeah, as far as just playing a character, it's been a long time. So,
oh, as a guy who. Now, granted, I do have the group I always talk about when I talk about D&D, the guys I've been playing with for like almost a decade. Other than those guys, if a game's being run, I'm running it. So I know how that feels, and I know how amazing it can be just to realize that I'm only responsible for my character. So I want to give that to you.
For sure, man. You know, I definitely appreciate it. That's for sure.
I have created what I think is a really interesting plot point, and I still haven't put together all of the in-between bits because I want to wait until we figure out what the characters look like before I do that. But I'm pretty confident that the middle bits are going to look very similar to a Numenera module that I have.
Yeah, no, I'm like really getting into the idea of playing. I mean, I've been having fun. Don't get me wrong. I've been having so much fun. I've done this the last few episodes, you know, planning the summer one-shot thing there. You know, we've succeeded with Dungeon World. We are going to have another session of that, turning it into a duology, just because they did so much and they had so much fun that it, you know, kind of extended it out. If all things go well and scheduling works, we'll talk about scheduling in a moment, I should have Stars Without Numbers in pocket by the time this episode of Game Store Profits comes into play. I got to tell you, the range of characters that they put together is pretty astounding, and I'm looking forward to sending them out to a wayward station on the fringes of the galaxy and seeing what they make of it. And then I've got next month, you were mentioning how August was busy. August is pretty busy for me, but then September gets real busy because I've got two sessions of Dungeons & Dragons I'll be putting together for them. And I created two separate groups, gave them the options of what kind of game they wanted to play, and ironically enough, they both chose kind of a combination of a Viking motif along with a distant frontier. So I'm kind of bringing in that little concept there. And it was interesting how they both kind of chose the same thing. But then one group is going with a certain type of group of warriors, and then the other one is going with, I have a Mr. Tinkerhammer, who is going to be a cleric, a gnomish cleric. And then I have a fighter, who is a dwarf, man of means, and a noble about town. But I don't know, it's just some of the ideas these guys are coming up with are pretty awesome. So definitely looking forward to that. It's going to be fun. That scheduling thing, though, that can be a real pickle. I mean, you can set your game up for months in advance and have it on the calendar and have it all set to go. Maybe even have a regular session set up, but then something comes up, right?
Even when I, you know, like I said, I participated in Gen Cant this year, and we talk about Victoriana, but before that, I had all these intentions of getting all this board gaming done for the other days of Gen Cant, and it all fell through, except for a couple. It's fun, the people at Haba actually followed this little statement, because I put up a picture of my nephew, and it's kind of adorable, because he's playing Animal Upon Animal. Yeah, he's still a little young for Animal Upon Animal. And so, my two favorite moments were one where he's like, alright, I'm gonna put this penguin on, and he literally, in the course of trying to put the penguin on, knocks over, like, three animals, but not breaking stride, he just puts the penguin down on the alligator and is like, I'm in! And I was so busy laughing at it that I didn't even correct him. The other time, he had a monkey, and he's like, I'm gonna put it next to the penguin. Now, if you've never played Animal Upon Animal, the monkey is kind of like almost on all fours, and the penguin is just like this straight up and down thing, and he was like gonna rest it on top of the penguin. And literally, it's me, Susan, and his mom, and we're all just like, buddy, I don't think you're going to be able, and with not missing a beat, kid just mic drops it. He puts that thing right on the penguin's head, and it just sits there. I
future engineer right there.
Oh, it was amazing.
There you go.
So, yeah, I played some of that. I got to play some Sushi Go, which is always a good one, and I got to play some Nyet, which Nyet is a really interesting game. And I'm also really terrible at it. I've pretty much discovered that trick-taking games are not my forte. And here's a trick-taking game where you have to not only figure out what's good for you, you have to pick your partner. So you have to try and discern who else is going to do what you're doing. You also have to figure out how to, you know, which things to say isn't going to happen. So, like, how many cards are we discarding? Or what's the trump? And what's the super trump? And who's going first? There's a lot going on in that, and I am horrible at it. I was pretty much the kiss of death for every player. There was a couple times where my buddy Kevin was across the table from me, and when it's your turn, when it's your deal, or whoever, when it's your when you're the first player, you get to pick who your team is. And there was one time I swear I could see a look of pain on my buddy Kevin's face when I said, I'm going to play with Kevin. And he's like, oh, okay. But I can also say, this is fun. And a while ago, I talked about the game of the month thing that Buttonshy Games and Jason Tagmeier sent me just to kind of run through and see what it's like. I'll probably put the link to me talking about the board game of the month thing at the end of this. But one of the games that he gave me was Pod X, which is a successful Kickstarter. I don't know if it's been sent out yet, but I got a preview copy of it. It is a fun little weird game. Like, I really like it, but it is, like, it's not something that you're going to go to. It's going to be something that, like, I've got 10 minutes and I'm bored. At least with the player count, we played it with three players. The whole thing about Pod X, it's designed by Daniel Solis, so I already knew, like, this is good. It's a good designer, it's a good company, it's going to be good. The idea is that there's one escape pod left from a ship that is going down, and all the players have to find the escape pod. And so, on your turn, you are basically playing different cards. You can pass, or you can fold and just say, there's no way I'm winning. I'm just going to fold and get 1 point just for folding. the way the cards work, there's kind of a duality to the cards. There's what the card's worth and where it is, like port, starboard, hub, which is basically port or starboard. And it has a value. And there's also, once you've dealt out all the cards, there's one card remaining. And that is where that card on the bottom of it tells you what you need in order to find the escape pod. So it'll say things like, have the highest public starboard card. So cards that are played out in front of you are called public, and cards that are still in your hand are private. And the fun thing is that only the person who dealt the cards gets to peek at what they need. So one player knows exactly what he needs to do. All the other players are trying to read those movements and read those plays and guess what the actual card is. This is why I think it's super light, but as a super light game, it's really, really fun and really interesting. Because you'd think, if I tell you that, oh, the person who deals is always going to win. Because they know what they're looking for. And I'll tell you, because I saw it a bunch of times, that's not always the case. Because you don't get new cards. You are stuck with the cards you have. And if the cards you have don't do what they need to do, you're trying to screw up other people. And there was one time where literally my friend Joy didn't make a play. She passed every turn and won. She had no idea what the card was. She just saw me play a card and she goes, nope, I'm good. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but I think it was something like have the lowest private card in your hand still. And she did. She had like a one. And I'm like, how did you know that? She goes, I just guessed. And I know for a fact that would really irritate some people. The idea that you could win by not playing would really irritate some people. But I think for a light, I think like each game maybe took, because you play up to 10 points, you're pretty much looking in the maybe like 15, 20 minute full game range there. So as such, I think it's a brilliant little game, but I could totally understand why people wouldn't like it. Because it like you have your hand and you're stuck with that hand, and your hand might be absolutely useless. And there's nothing you can do about that. But I do. I think for the $10 wallet game that it is, it's perfect for what it is. It's great. It's a lot of fun. It's a real quick play. I could easily see playing that in like an airport waiting for the plane or something.
If you have fun, there shouldn't be nothing wrong with that, you know?
Well, there are people who get real up in arms about chance. Like, I've seen people like rage against any game that involves dice.
I can't stand people like that.
Gosh, I wonder why.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, it's not just the hobby. I mean, there's always a level of strategy, but there's always a level of chance no matter what. I mean, even if you're playing a game where you draw cards, I mean, there's your chance there. I mean, if you knew what was going to happen or you could control the aspect of everything, the game would not be fun.
You're talking about people who, those are the games they play. Because those games do exist.
I know.
But anyway, so that pretty much sums up my Gen Con experience and the stuff that I've played in between podcasts. Kind of bringing it back before we swing back, I do want to hit just a couple things, but then we're going to go right back to Daniel because I do want you to talk about Gen Con. There's a couple, like, let's just bust into news. We don't often do news unless big things happened. There, you know, normally it just kind of happens in the discussion, but I do want to kind of set apart this little bit because we're not talking about the Gen Con news because everybody knows about that, and Daniel will end up talking about some of it, I'm sure. But some stuff has been happening recently that, oddly enough, a lot of it has to do with role-playing games. But I think that we needed to address that. And the first one, which was an incredible bummer to me, and I am upset by this, but I understand completely. The guys at Gamers Table, which I was happy to meet them at last year's Gen Con to tie it all together. They announced that they are pretty much no longer after they're at episode 280 something, I think. And when they hit episode 300, they're stomping their weekly podcast. And, you know, that it's crazy to me. Like, I completely understand because they have a lot of other projects. And it was really cool because one of the guys messaged me over Twitter and he's like, hey, I want to do this nonprofit project. How do you do that? So he was asking, you know, getting some information about that. I was happy to help him with, you know, with what little knowledge I have. My knowledge was basically get a lawyer. It's really important. But I figured there was something kind of happening. And then to have that announcement kind of drop, I am happy that they are still going to do Openly Gamer Theater because those projects are phenomenal. It'd be nice to maybe even see them doing more of that now. And I'm not just saying that because occasionally they let me do voice acting for them. They do really phenomenal work there. But like I said, there will be a time of mourning when those guys stop doing weekly shows. The other thing, and there's not going to be much we're going to be able to talk about it because it's still, as the time of recording, it's still very much in previews. But I have been showing, you know, there are two kinds of fandoms that I go nuts about. If you've ever heard me talk about anything on this podcast, in board games, it's Plaid Hat.
Oh, yeah.
And in role-playing games, it's Monty Cook and the guys at Numenera. Well, Monty Cook is putting out a brand new role-playing game, and the Kickstarter is set to go live the day this episode goes live.
Yay!
So, the short version, because it's really hard to piece together a full picture of this game. They just did the release YouTube video, and again, I'll put that link. No, I won't even put that link. I'll put the link to the Kickstarter because it's going to be. I think it's going to be live if I got my dates right. But the game, there's a cool bit of stuff that goes along with this game. One, the setting. It is because I'm a Neil Gaiman fan. You can understand that I am a big fan of sideways reality, like stuff that's partly based in reality, but incredibly not at the same time. And this seems so very much like that. Like there's another world that exists just on the fringes of ours. All the preview stuff is all talking about, you know, escaping, and you've always known there's something else to life, but you've never figured it out. Well, it's this. It looks absolutely fascinating. The other thing that I'm excited about for this project is the fact that so much of the marketing that they're doing is targeting this at people who are busy. They're saying that there's app integration and there's all this other stuff that even if you can't make it to the table, you are still able to participate.
Really?
Like that is a huge, I don't know exactly how that's working. There's been some hints at some of the ways that works. I'm sure when the Kickstarter goes live, there'll be more information about that, but that is a
apps.
That is a,
I'm thinking apps.
That is a huge push for this, is that they understand that it's hard to do this as an adult. And I think they're realizing that as more and more YouTube channels, like ours is just a ripple. Ours is nothing compared to some of the YouTube channels out there that are doing role-playing games like Critical Role and Real Role Play and all those guys that are doing all that stuff. I think people are starting to realize that games like Roll20, like platforms like Roll20, like Fantasy Grounds, they are tapping into a market that nobody else is. I think that's why you're starting to see Roll20 team up with Wizards of the Coast to put D&D on Roll20. I think that's why, you know, I think companies are realizing that a lot of their demographic has grown up and are dealing with the fact that it's hard to be an adult and a gamer in a tabletop thing. And I'm really curious to see how this works. And I'm not going to lie, I can already see myself working up a Theology of Play article about this because they're doing a preview and it's just audio kind of stuff. And it's just real short audio snippets. And these things are just powerfully done. Like, I actually Twittered Shanna and Bruce Cordell, and I'm just like, I don't know which one of y'all are responsible for these, but they're amazing. And she basically just like, no, that's all Monty. And so I was like, we'll slap that man on the back and shake his hand, because the most recent one that came out when, you know, as we're recording, there, like, there's a lot of cool, like, I love just weird stuff, and I fully acknowledge that. But there was a line in the most recent one. The whole thing was beautiful, and it read like a folktale. But there was a line in it where this one guy, they're telling a story, and the one character in the story says, "When I was a young man, I looked for God, and I found him. I so took what I found, and I made him into a gun. Being both a maker and a younger fellow at the time, it made sense." And I'm like, dang, I could preach a sermon on that line.
I mean, when I first saw that, when it was posted, I was like, wait a minute, that's like almost every new Christian.
Yeah. And there was another one that wasn't so much the religious angle, but just a beautiful phrase. It said, "I see an angel with words for wings. He's standing on the corner, blank-faced with a beggar's bowl, seeking emotions from passers-by." I'm like, why am I not already in this game? This is a world that I want to play in. I'm completely lacking money, so I'm going to be trying, because when this Kickstarter goes live, I'm sure, I saw on the release video that they just put on YouTube all the stuff that comes with it. So I'm sure the price tag will be not fun for my wallet. So I'm going to be like calling in favors. Who wants to buy me something pretty? Because I want to be playing this on our YouTube channel. I don't care if it's after, you know, I don't care when, you know, this eventually happens. But I want it to be there, because this looks amazing.
So is it based on the Cypher system?
No,
or
it's,
is it based on
it's
some
a
other...
completely different system. It's not Cypher system. It's not anything else. It is its own animal.
Interesting. I have a feeling, I mean, that's, you know, a lot of players out there with role-playing games have been trying to merge mediums when it came to, you know, having the ability to have some players not make it and then still try and keep them incorporated, that sort of stuff. I mean, heck, even on Gamers Table, they talked about how they were bringing in that, it's called WhatsApp. It's a texting app that they used amongst the group to try and keep things going in between sessions or if somebody missed. But it'll be interesting to see how game-wise, how mechanics-wise you can bring that into account. Because it's one thing that it's on the game master's shoulders to say, okay, well, we chatted all week on, you know, on a play-by-post, and, you know, even though this person couldn't make it this week, I still got a lot done, blah, blah, blah. How many experience points do I give them? I wonder how they're going to work that into the system. That'll be a very interesting thing to see.
Well, it seems to be very narrative-driven. It seems to be... Again, it's hard to say. Everything's kind of just hinted at and weird little sideways, you know, comments, because they're just doing previews now. But, wow, it sounds really... Like, the potential is really, really cool for this, and I'm really curious to see what it looks like. All right, so news over... Let's have Daniel talk about his battles with acquisition disorder.
Well, let's see here. Gen Con was wonderful. And what I mean by wonderful is just the ability to have that many people that are into the same thing that I'm into in one area. Because when I was outside, you know, getting some fresh air, I could talk Pokemon Go to people. When somebody was looking at dice, I could talk dice to them. We could talk games and things like that. I always love it when I could do things like that. But most of my Gen Con I spent like other people. I was shopping. And mainly, I had a list for the ministry and for myself, because I did buy myself 2 birthday gifts. And I bought a bunch of kids' games for the ministry so we could branch out there, so it could make it easier on younger parents to come and play. But I also was helping Kevin Cook buy dice. And he is a spry little man that he can cover a lot of ground really fast, and you got to keep up with him, and because he has to hit the entire convention hall and try to get dice from everybody that has dice that he doesn't have yet. So, and that's what I spent most of my commission doing, that plus helping out some other dice manufacturers. You know, they go through times where they needed some assistance, and I'd jump in since they already knew me. I could help them out and things like that. But it was awesome. And the coolest part for me was the church service on Sunday, because I've always heard good things about it, but it was amazing. The Holy Spirit was moving, and it was just, it was awesome. And TR and his wonderful daughters, I got to meet them and spend a lot of time with them as well, and had fun with them.
It was fun how we were joking about the fact that we were saying that Daniel was the basically the
imaginary friend.
Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. That you were the imaginary friend of the Knight family, because only the Knight family responded that they had seen you.
Yes, it is true. we got to go out and have lunch together, and, you know, we got to talk a little bit in the booth and things like that, and run into each other while shopping, and we got to have church service together, which was always good. So,
yeah, I saw a couple of clips of the church service. It really looked good. It's so neat to see everybody just packed in there and stuff.
Were you at the church service last year?
No, I didn't get a chance to go because we drove back Saturday night.
That's right. I am really curious then, because I've been able to do that the past handful of years. And I remember what it was like the first time. Like, I almost teared up the first time I was at that. I'm really curious, like, what was it like for you, having heard about it, but actually getting to see that experience of doing the worship at Gen Con?
Well, I'll tell you this. I've been to a Fans for Christ / Christian Gamers Guild service before, and it's at Dragon Con. And, you know, Jim usually leads the service on that, Jim Chatfield. But, you know, this was a little bit different. I always heard it was epic compared to everything else. We went ahead, we took communion, which I hadn't got to do in about a year, which was epic. And just to realize that I'm in there with family of two different varieties. Family of, this is my Christian family, and family of, this is my gaming family. These people enjoy the same things I enjoy, but it was off the scale. I wouldn't say off the scale. It was off the chart a little bit because, you know, it's just, it's not like that at Dragon Con. Dragon Con, you know, we probably had 30 to 40 people in there. I'm pretty sure we had like close to 200 in the one at Gen Con.
Yeah. If it was in the same room that they did it last year, that room housed about that many, and you guys, it looked like y'all were standing room only. So that sounds about right.
And also Sam Haley and Tom Bassel lead service. That's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I heard amazing things. I mean, I am a little biased because, you know, Derek is me 10 years in the future. So I am a little biased about my boy and his preaching skills. But I did hear that Tom Bassel, you know, showed up and did an amazing job. Like I heard great things. People coming out of that just really feeling blessed by that, which is cool. And I like the fact that, because for so long, the music has been, you know, canned worship. It's literally been, like, let's get a CD player. So it was nice that Sam was able to participate, because Sam actually can play guitar.
Yeah, he can. Yeah, it was, I still want to hear Derek preach, and I'm tempted to drive to Trenton just to hear him preach, but that's like an 8-hour drive almost for me.
I will say that him, from what I've heard, he occasionally will put up sermons from his church, and I will say that him preaching at home is pretty much him preaching at Gen Con, with only slight derivation from that.
I did get to run into Derek while we were running through the halls and stuff like that, and we said hi and shook hands and chatted for a second, but he was like a man on a mission trying to hand out shirts for GaryCon, because Luke Gygax is sending him a bunch of shirts. So
yeah, it was really crazy, because he wasn't even expecting to be there this year. That whole thing kind of happened real quick, and I won't go into all his stuff because I only know what he posted on Facebook. I haven't talked with him since Gen Con, But I will say that he had some really cool opportunities happen, so I'm not surprised that he was running around like a madman, because he didn't even wasn't even able to hang out for Sunday.
Yeah, I know. He had to, because his church wanted him back, so he had to leave Saturday night.
So what kind of, I want to hear your experience, because like I said, y'all can look back at the older episodes of me talking about Gen Con and hear me, like, in fact, I think I devoted one whole bonus episode just to the church service. But tell me, just kind of, you know, you kind of hinted at it, but just what stood out about the church service, about being with other gamers, about that, like, what made it so special?
It was the spirit of it. I mean, we had all come together, and probably most of us had had a great week. And just the spirit that everybody had there, worshiping God at the same time and being fed, it was just, you know, there wasn't, and this is weird to say this, but there wasn't any, I couldn't feel any strife there. You know how sometimes there is conflict and strife inside of churches, and it does hinder the spirit. But, you know, most of us didn't even know each other, and if there was any conflict, it was on a tabletop. And, you know, and it was a peace. There was a peace there. That's probably the best way I can explain it, was the peace.
Especially with all of the hubbub outside.
Oh yeah, it was so, and it was quiet in there. Of course, we were in in the Westin compared to being in the actual convention center, but it still gets loud. You can still hear that stuff. So I did buy a lot of dice. If anybody has any questions about that too.
I am curious. Did you get to stop by and see the Game Church crew? Because those guys were back at Gen Con this year.
Yes, I stopped and pestered them at least once a day. Pestered Gwaltney once a day. We tried to hook up, but to play some Scythe, because he really wanted to play it. But every time I got home or back to the room and my head hit that pillow, I was out. I get up at like 6 a.m. So by the time 6 and then 7 rolls around, I'm already dressed and we're eating breakfast. And as soon as they let us in the doors, we were at it. So we had exhibitor badges, so we got in early. And, you know, I'll give Jeff a picture to post as well. But I was helping out in booths when they would get swamped. As y'all know, I'm friends with Norse Foundry and Game Science. And there's another one there that y'all probably haven't heard of called Little Cluse. I'm friends with her as well. But, you know, when Game Science would get slammed, I would go in and help.
Crazy. Well, I think you know, to wrap things up, I'm really interested in this, mostly because I think that this is so crucial to distinguish what we do from just having game days at a church. And I'm actually working up, I've been working on it for a while, but I just need to put the finishing touches on really saying it right. I've come to realize just how much of a service minded attitude you need to have to do this ministry well. And it's really interesting to me that you're talking about the fact that so much of your time, like, granted, you know, we joke about shopping because you can't go to Gen Con and not, but so much of the other stuff that you're talking about is, you know, you stop by the Game Church, you stop by other booths, you sell stuff, even though, I mean, granted, Norse Foundry was selling your dice towers, but
yeah.
I'm pretty confident you weren't making a dime on Game Science, but you know, you stop by and serve them too.
I mean, they hooked me up with free stuff. But that's about it.
Yeah, and it's probably, you know, free stuff that is akin to what you already have. Because I don't know of a single thing of dice that you don't have at least the equivalent of.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that's such a distinctive about what we're trying to do, and what I think, you know, I think we're right on the cusp, and I'm really thinking that so much of the push of, and I'm really excited that we're seeing more regular stuff happening. I've been talking with Sean, Sean's going to a convention that I'm not able to get to. I'm looking to get to a couple local Jersey conventions. Like, we're starting to see regular game days happen at churches. I'm just launching one next month that's local here. I have a buddy of mine who wants me to come down and lead a D&D game with his buddies and then talk about inroads at the church on Sundays. Like, we're really starting to see churches at a bare minimum be curious about what we're doing, and a lot of them are really getting excited about it. And the thing that always comes back to me is that it has to be about serving the public. It has to be about serving the people that come in. Because I can talk about the fact that we have an open table policy. I can talk about the fact that anyone can come and play regardless of what they think about anything. I can say that all I want, but if I say that, and one thing that I've been told by a bunch of people, especially those who aren't Christians, is that there's an expectation that we don't actually mean that. There's an expectation that when we say everyone can come in, everyone's welcome, you don't have to, you know, profess, you know, a 5-point faith thing every time you want to come and push cardboard with us.
Well, we can easily refute that just by showing our videos.
Well, one of the things I tell people is like, hey, you can't, there's no switch bait here. So whenever I have an event as well, so.
Yeah, and that's something that's been such a driving force with this, because of the fact that there's a shock value even of that, because it was crazy, because Heather, you know, our number one fan, her boyfriend came up to TavernCon with them, and I'm gonna tell you that even he apparently was shocked that we didn't actually give him, you know, a 5-point message. We had, you know, a lot of people who gave us that line of I didn't think churches would ever do this. And again, it's on everything I put out there. It's on every brochure. I pinned it on our website that says you won't be preached at unless you ask us to. Like, we put it on everything, but people still don't believe it because they're so used to churches being about how do we get them to the message. And I think that so much of what's working here is the idea that we're trusting in God to give us the moment of the message. We're not manufacturing it. That we're putting trust in the fact that God wants this to happen, and we're here just to connect with people. We had somebody who was talking about doing prayers, you know, prayer stuff at Gen Con, and he asked for advice, and I told him a bunch of stuff. If you were in the tavern, you saw it. But the one thing that kept was my overwhelming theme when I gave him the advice was just serve people. Give people water. If you have any kind of sewing skill, cosplay people need, like, we last year we met a woman who that was her thing. Like, she had this Batman utility belt of sewing stuff to help people with cosplay, you know, malfunctions. Like, that's the kind of stuff that people need. That's the kind of stuff that gets people asking about what we're there for, what our purpose is. It's why I decided that Gen Con wasn't going to be our thing this year. And it's primary, you know, obviously a lot of it is financial, but so much of it is that we don't, when Gen Con has reached a level that kind of stuff can't happen, at least not on any kind of major scale. It's like you try and squeeze it in when you can, when you're not in the middle of the dealer hall. But it's why, you know, I'm looking forward to stuff like possibly doing Origins next year and doing these smaller cons, and I'm still working on the details about, you know, going out to Save Against Fear, which is the Bodana Group's thing. Like, there's such an opportunity to just get over ourselves and serve people in such small but very tangible ways. And I think it's, especially with Gen Con, it's easy to get caught up in the ridiculousness of Gen Con. It is. Like, I was reading an article about somebody, like, feeling downright depressed, and that being, like, a psychological thing. Like, who was it? I think it was Chevy, who did his little shed video and was talking about the fact that post-con depression is a thing. And I'm like, it is. Because it's a whole other world. It's a whole other experience. And the ability to come in and just tangibly say, here, I think you need this. And not, you know, it's not a water bottle with, you know, Bible verses on it. It's just, you look thirsty, hydrate, because otherwise you're going to pass out in an hour.
Yeah, it's those little things. You may not even make a be able to hand anything to them or give them the 5-point thing like you're talking about, but at some point somebody will be driving on the way home and they'll think back and there was that lady with the utility belt of sewing gear. There was that guy that was passing out water. You remember him? Oh yeah. And there's a conversation that'll start and the Holy Spirit will move. You never know what'll come of that.
The thing I love about it, and it's funny because it's the same thing I love about it, is the same thing that a lot of people get antsy about. It's really that you don't care about whether they get to that moment of faith. And that seems kind of weird from a Christian ministry to say that we're not pushing for that. So I want to clarify. We want to desperately share our faith. But we want to do it in real and tangible ways. We want to do it in honest ways. And there's such an opportunity to just say, we're here for you. Like, without expectation, without, you know, whatever. It's like that church service that I always love, you know, realizing just how many denominations. And not even talking about, you know, all the different other little sub-factions that we could get into when it comes to gamers and church folk. But just think about the overarching, think of how many denominations are there present. And how many times, like on a Facebook or on a Twitter, you know, people would be like all angsty because of people from a different denomination. And yet, in that room, they're together. And yeah, I just, every time I do, you know, I talk about conventions, I do anything like that, and I get... why I get psyched about doing that and why I hope that we can get inroads to more and more conventions, you know, finances. But the reason I hope we can get to more and more is because of the fact that is such an important thing. Just that idea of serving people, that we have that opportunity to just say, look, I don't care if you buy what I'm selling, but I'm here to give you this anyway. I'm here to offer you something, and it's okay if you don't want what I have to say. I'm not waiting for you to say yes before I give it to you.
Very true. Very true. I mean, it's about being a messenger. It's not about you controlling how the message is received. It's not about you controlling how long it takes the message to take root. It's about being willing. It's about being willing to share on a level that the Lord has set up for you. You know, you could have your utility belt, right? You go in there, you're ready to, you know, fix up cosplay gear, or you're ready to pass out water. But it may wind up being that, you know, some guy's walking by and you can tell he doesn't have money. You can tell he's hungry and he probably spent money where he shouldn't have, or whatever the case is. You don't even care, but you're there to help him. You buy him a meal and you sit down and you chat. And you know what? That may have been the one point of contact that the Lord had for you the whole week, right? Even though you had all these plans to do all these different things, and you did them because your heart was there, but it was the one person that you did or that you talked to that made all the difference. That was the whole reason you were there. And we just, you know, as people of the faith, you know, we have to be willing to accept those unexpected things. And to know that the Lord has it all in control. All
right, guys. So definitely not your typical post-Gen Con episode, but I think one that is very much us.
That's for sure.
I will probably end up at some point future miking this episode a little bit, just because I'll give a report. I would talk about it, but it will have already happened by the time this episode goes live. On Friday, I'll be hanging out with the ladies of the round table to talk about tabletop gaming and design and why it's not only important that we celebrate the ladies that are already involved, not only in the hobby, but in the industry, but also to encourage young girls to get into the industry, to get into this sort of field. I'm super excited to sit down with them. So I might future mic it, or I might literally just have future mic say, "Yup, that was awesome. Here's a link." We'll see how that goes.
Well, I guess it goes like this. Hi kids, Future Mike here with a bit about my time with the ladies in the round table. It was a ton of fun to be able to talk tabletop gaming with them on their show, and I want to take a second to thank friend of Inroads and guest on multiple episodes of GSP, Holly Ann Satola, aka Holly Ann Simon if you're in the tavern, for inviting me on there in the first place to get that opportunity to say that. I'll put a link up to the archive so you can check it out later if you weren't able to watch on Friday night. We didn't get too much in-depth about game design and how it promotes STEM education, but that was mostly just because we were so busy talking about the power of gaming as a whole. However, I really don't think I have to tell this audience about how important aspects of mathematics and the arts affect the industry as a whole. We kind of don't have an industry without them. I did get a chance, however, to give some shout-outs to some amazing women doing amazing work in the game industry, and just in case you don't get around to going back and watching that replay, I'm going to put those same shout-outs right now. These are all just fantastic ladies that I, you know, any one of them could have done an amazing job doing almost, I would say, better than anything I could have said there, but I happen to have the connection, so check these ladies out. They are all awesome and well worth your time to follow. Maggie Cottrell, a.k.a. MaggieBot on Twitter, she's doing great work. If you're ever out by her and by her store, you need to go check her out. She's a fantastic person. Brittany Bowe, a.k.a. Bebo, a.k.a. GameWire Warrior, she is just an incredibly fun person to watch. She's really passionate about games and about people, and it shows in everything she does. Stephanie Straw, the sparkling spirit of board gaming. I could take the time to list all of the YouTube videos that you might see her on and podcasts that you might hear her on, but I'd be here for another hour. So I'm just going to say her Twitter is insert straw here. Tell her I said hi because we're Twitter friends and she's awesome. Suzanne Sheldon is on a lot of what the Dice Tower is doing right now. She does a lot of the Kickstarter updates. She used to do mobile games, and she still does. She's just not doing it for the channel as official as it was before. But she's also well worth following and watching her videos. She is another person who has a lot of passion and is doing great stuff in gaming. And she does a lot of news. And so if you want to be up to date on everything that's out there, she is an important resource to check out. I will also talk about a couple ladies that literally are creating some of the stuff that I play on a daily basis, either in the past or currently. I couldn't help but talk about Laura Hickman and Margaret Weiss, because those two ladies literally wrote my childhood. So much of the work that they've done about gaming and fiction have been a part of how I got to be the incredible nerd that I am today. So I wanted to give a shout out to them as well. And we already mentioned the company that is Monte Cook, and now I'm going to talk to a driving force and what makes that company and that brand so awesome, Shanna Germain. She is a very talented producer. She does an amazing job of writing. She is so pivotal in making all these games. She just won an Emmy for No Thank You Evil, and definitely check her out. She does a lot of cool stuff as well. And I can't end without paying homage to Plaid Hat, because even when I'm doing shout-outs, I have to give homage to Plaid Hat. Fernanda Suarez, her artwork is breathtaking, and if you've never seen it, you need to fix that. Even if you never play Ashes, even if you've never played any of the Dead of Winter games, her artwork is gorgeous, and you need to see it.
Anyway, guys, go check out Ladies of the Round Table. Their show is cool. They're doing a lot of great work. I really love what they're doing and wish that we could do more with them, but I'm pretty confident that you will see them again, either on our show or us on their show, or just partnering up for events. I'm pretty confident that this relationship is going to go just further on, even if it's not on any kind of formal basis, just because I have a lot of, you know, myself and the rest of the En-ROADS board has a lot of appreciation for the work that they're doing. So go check them out, and I am going to just stop talking and let Past Mike and the boys finish up the podcast. Future Mike, out.
Well, that is as spectacular a place as any, I think, to bring it to a close. You know, for all those folks out there who want to know a little bit more about En-ROADS, you can always visit us at enroadsministries.com. You can visit us on the Tavern out there. Daniel's out there. Obviously, Daniel's everywhere. You know, he's in Indianapolis. He's in Tennessee. He's all over the place. Of course, Mike is going to be plastered all over the internets, it seems, between his various games and also his various interviews. So definitely be looking forward to our notifications on that. Anything I missed? You guys want to jump in on anything?
I'll just say that one thing that I've been thinking a lot about is just the idea that so much of how people find us is from word of mouth and from other people sharing our site. Like I just mentioned, the Ladies of the Roundtable, they tweeted about the fact that I'm going to be there, and like this huge flock of people came to our site. And all it comes, like they didn't like plaster the internet with it. They just said like two or three tweets that said, hey, this is happening. There's a huge power in you guys getting out there and talking about us. I'm hoping that we're putting out content that you guys want to listen to. I'm hoping that I don't even need to hope, because I know that I've gotten a pile of emails, and I've been on Facebook Messenger with some of you guys, and there's a lot of really encouraging messages that you guys are sending in to my email and to my Twitter. And I hope that if you guys are listening to this and you really like the content, that you'll go out and share it. Share our YouTube channel. We got people who are putting in a lot of effort to make those games happen, and I'm really hoping that we can get more people seeing those. Just a simple thing like spending 2 minutes going to iTunes to rate and review this podcast is a huge thing, because we are, because we're in this niche between gaming and faith, we have a hard time showing up in the top pages of either gaming or faith. And every review that you guys give us, every comment that you do, every, you know, whatever star review you want to give us, every one of those helps put us higher on the list so that people can find us. Every share is one more person who's going to find out about us. And so I love the community that we have. And one thing that I love is just how excited you are about what we're doing. And I'm really hoping that you guys will take that excitement and share it with other people, because your support is literally how we do this. Like as much as I said, you know, I want to En-ROADS at more conventions, that needs to get paid for. so whether that's talking about us or praying for us or supporting us financially or all of the above, I really hope that if you guys like what we're doing, that you guys would consider supporting us.
All right, Daniel, you want to take us out?
I'm going to turn that down.
We'll see. That's okay, because we knew somewhere that it.
Yeah, I don't have my script in front of me. You know, and normally what I would say is, you know, God is the game master, and no matter how the dice fall, the game will go on.
Look at you.
There it is.